Welcome to episode 303 of After the Credits. I am your Dungeon Master, Marina Antunes. We're joined by fellow co-hosts.
Bill Harris.
Steve Stebbing.
And Melissa McDowell.
Hey.
Welcome back, Melissa.
Yeah, maybe it'll keep us on the rails this time.
I don't know. I'm almost alive. I've been sick for four out of the last 5 weeks, first Holy with COVID shit. And then with bronchitis. So it's been super fun. Wow. Super fun.
Oh, you look so energized for somebody that's been sick for 4 weeks.
I'm so over being sick at this point. Like, I'm not even 100% healthy yet, but I'm just over it.
Well, thanks for being here, because yes, we did get a little off the tracks last time.
I mean, to be fair though, we also recorded in like the evening.
True.
And which True. Is like just different.
You know,
it's the alcohol.
I've been drinking for a good 2 hours before the podcast, so that probably wasn't a good thing.
I'm not a drinker, so I use my vape pen, and yeah, I was already a couple sheets in.
So that's the last 4 weeks, guys.
Yeah.
And to be fair, we voted on the movie, and I proxy voted for Melissa anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
And we may have picked the wrong movie, I would say, but you know, we'll get to that.
I feel like it's going to be a short discussion, really.
This is why I think it might have been the wrong movie. We maybe should have gone with John Wick, because mm-hmm. I think there's probably more to dig into. But it is what it is. Let's get into it, shall we? The movie of the month. At least it's a lot. Well, I thought it was a lot of fun. Dungeons and Dragons. Heroes Among Thieves. I have to get the subtitle.
Apparently. Honor Among Thieves.
Honor.
Oh, shit. So that's how the day is going so far.
Yeah, there we go.
You're cut off, Marina.
I'd like to see you try. Okay. So directed by John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein, who previously did Vacation, which is terrible, right? Mm-hmm. We can all agree on that. But Game Night's actually pretty decent.
Game Night was better than it had any right to be.
I fully agree.
I was casting shade before heading to like the promo screening of it. I was casting shade at it. I'm like, this is not going to be good. Like, I love Jason Bateman, but this is not going to be good.
But also, can we just say how cool it is that, because John Francis Daly played like in Freaks and Geeks, played mm-hmm. a D&D nerd.
Yeah.
And so him writing and directing this film is also kind of cool for all of us Freaks and Geeks fans.
A little poetic justice for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's clearly in their wheelhouse because the movie is a lot of fun. I mean, I haven't played D&D since high school. So God, I don't know anything of it. And I went with some friends that I don't know if they still play, but they're very much in that realm. To the point where after the movie, we were talking about some of the scenes and they were geeking out about the reference to the cartoon from the 80s, which I totally did not get. Mm-hmm. there's a lot of insider, I guess, baseball stuff in here for anybody that's into D&D. But overall, what did you guys think?
Can I just ask first, did everybody play D&D before?
Like, not really. Nope. Not Me really. Either. A lot of the references I didn't really get. I got Gelatinous Cube. I know that one. And I do know the trap treasure chest. I've seen that before. But yeah, a lot of like full-on references. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have get.
I've never played.
Like you, Marina, I went with D&D nerds. So they filled me in on most of the Easter eggs and some of the things that were not really correct, but they could understand why they made the shifts because of entertainment value.
I played D&D for like one summer because I liked a boy. Hello, high school.
Yeah.
So I know very little about it, but I did go with some friends, like I said, that are big fans. And so we did talk a little bit about the Easter eggs, but that they didn't really talk too much about that. We mostly were kind of just geeking out about how much fun it was because mm-hmm. it felt a little bit like, to me at least, it had the same sort of tone as Willow, where it wasn't taking itself too seriously. And I think that was the right approach to take. Mm-hmm. But it's also not like a straight out slapstick comedy. It kind of falls somewhere in between. And for me personally, I thought it walked that line pretty well. I mean, I wish the stakes were higher, but then it's a Dungeons and Dragons movie. Like, it's really entertaining and everybody is a lot of fun. And Chris Pine is very handsome.
I don't know, man. I think his lips are too big for his face.
Wow.
She agrees with Michelle Rodriguez on this one. Yep.
Oh, is that what she said?
That's what she says. Your lips are too big for your face. Yeah. I think that's really funny. I also think that this is it's interesting that the characters we follow are not the greatest in what they do. And I think it's like you're following like a beginner party within Dungeons and Dragons, which is also sort of meta. Like, this movie manages to be meta without acknowledging how meta it is sometimes. And I kind of enjoyed that factor. And I mean, the humor in this movie hits every time. I mean, all the stuff with Jarnathan is freaking brilliant. Like, especially the diving out the window with him and then like bookending it with Hugh Grant trying to do the same thing. Like, it's really funny. Or waiting for Jarnathan. Like, shouldn't we? I feel like Jarnathan would really like this part. Shouldn't we wait for him?
I also love the pudgy dragon. And now,
yes.
I want more body diversity for mythical creatures in media.
So supposedly that's a real D&D character. Mm-hmm. One of my D&D nerds told me this. I didn't know. Of course, the D&D nerds didn't see Tom Morello in the crowd, but I fucking did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't see Tom Morello in the crowd.
Oh, he's there.
Oh, he's there. Shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to rage against this machine.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, and so I rushed home, and I'm like Googling. I'm like, did I fucking see Tom Morello in the crowd? And yeah, he's there.
That's so
I wonder
cool.
who else, what other Hollywood stars are making their, are hiding in the credits, in the crowds there.
I would hope someone like Joe Manganiello, who is
a huge
D&D guy. He's a dungeon master, as far as I know, as well.
Yeah.
There's so many
out
there.
Isn't he about to make a TV series, too?
He might, yeah.
Netflix, I think.
Yeah, so like, yeah, I want to say like Will Wheaton. There's a whole shitload of D&D like celebrities out there. So yeah, maybe they all had little
Vin Diesel guys. Vin Diesel,
yeah, but Vin Diesel already made the last Witch Hunter, and that was his involvement, and he won't lower his pudgy self for anybody else.
Speaking of Vin Diesel, can I make an observation?
Sure.
Does this movie really kind of feel like Guardians of the Galaxy to you?
Like a ragtag bunch of assholes that are trying
to kind of
a little bit.
Not be selfish. Yeah, it's got a little bit of that.
Yeah, it's like this. That. I kind of got that vibe after watching it, but I did really like it. It's I think it's really well shot.
Yes,
the acting is surprisingly good. I don't think Michelle Rodriguez gets enough credit for being in two major franchises now. She always seems to be the one nobody ever talks about, but she constantly does really good work.
She excels in this one too.
Yeah, like, she's really good.
Probably this is, in my opinion, one of her best.
And I like Sophia Lillis. She's got a really great presence. All the transformations and how well that worked. I thought that was really great.
I thought she was really underused in this, to be honest. But I adore her. So
yeah, and the steamy guy from Bridgerton was steamy.
Yeah, René Jean.
Even with that terrible haircut, he's still
very terrible haircut.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I figured out something. How do you say his first name?
Reggae.
It's Reggae.
Jean Page.
Reggae.
Reggae Jean
Page. Reggae Jean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was oh, that's even better.
Yeah.
Like,
so
I love Justice Smith, actually. I really, yeah, really good. Like getting, Justice Smith. I like him in everything.
Getting better and better every time he's in something. I enjoy him more and more. And I'm probably one of the few that actually enjoyed Sharper. And he was Sharper. The reason I liked Sharper.
Yeah, me too.
So.
I haven't seen it. I can't comment.
I mean, the first time I saw Justice Smith was in that the Bronx series on Netflix that was like the history of hip-hop.
Oh, Get Down.
Which I really liked. Like him and Shameik Moore. Like, it was a really good cast. And it was like a kind of a dynamic series. And it got canceled too early. Like most Baz good Luhrmann. Things on Netflix.
Yeah. Baz Luhrmann produced it. I never got to see that one. So the first thing that I saw Justice Smith is either Detective Pikachu or Fallen Kingdom, Jurassic World. It was one of those two. That was the first time I saw him. I don't know which one came first. But
I'm also kind of digging this new a-hole Hugh Grant persona thing he's got going on.
In real life.
Is it really a persona, though?
No, I think it's an asshole.
Yeah. I think it's actually Hugh Grant. being himself.
That Oscar interview was
horrible.
It was painful.
Terrible.
But I felt so bad for Ashley Graham.
She didn't deserve any.
I think you guys might be right.
She did not.
They're inane conversations. Like, I don't know. I'm more surprised that it took this long for a celebrity to react that way to these stupid questions. Like, I don't know. I
agree, but you also have to play ball. I mean, you know what you're there for.
Yeah.
Well, I guess he didn't have to stop. He could have kept walking.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
I don't know. It was also funny. I think that was the point.
It wasn't
just him being an asshole. It was also like him being an asshole in a sort of
and it was a bit amusing. But I mean, the last couple of things that he's been in, he's been an asshole.
Yeah.
So I kind of think he's just embracing his own personality on screen.
How can you be so checked out that you don't know what you did on that film that you filmed?
He was whatever. High.
He had to have been, especially because like he doesn't do films like that regularly.
Yeah.
So you would think it would be a monochrome more memorable than anything else he'd done in the last little while before. Like if we're looking back, like he did that Nicole Kidman series probably recently, the Undoing. Yeah. And maybe he did that at the Guy Ritchie one, the Operation to Fortune or whatever.
Yep.
But like,
which he also plays an asshole in.
Right. Yeah. And then
hence why I say he's embracing his own, you know, personality on screen, which I'm totally fine with. Like it works for him. He's making it work.
And I think he's so much fun in Dungeons and Dragons. Like the platform thing where he's introducing the games or whatever, and he's like, "This is absurdly high. We talked about this." I'm, you know, there's certain fun things, and you would think it would just be a little more memorable, but he's just so checked out that I guess he doesn't care. Which it's still amazing to think that as checked out as he is this late in his career, he's still doing some of his best work of his career. Like if he was checked out doing Paddington 2, then I mean, bravo, sir. Bravo. Cause you nailed it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really like Chris Pine. I mean, I've always liked Chris Pine, though the movies that he's been in haven't been, I don't think, worthy of his performances. They're not always good, even though he's usually pretty good in them. So it's nice to see him. He's kind of found his groove the last couple of years as this like sort of older, suave, kind of still a little bit douchey leading character. And I think it really works for him. I really like him in general.
I think that's what's awesome about Chris Pine is he's like leading man who sort of takes the piss at being leading man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, right?
He doesn't take it very seriously, and you can tell. And I think that makes it a bit more appealing.
Well, I agree.
And this is his pivot off after playing the king of the incels in Olivia Wilde's misstep debacle, which he carries a little bit. Let's talk about talking about that movie. Flo carries the whole movie, but Chris Pine carries a little bit of it too.
Yeah. I agree. I didn't hate that movie as much as everybody else did.
It's disjointed and missing so much stuff. There's much stuff missing in that movie, and she's
but
still
it's not
claims,
terrible.
No, but it's just misguided and misaligned. And missing so much stuff, but still she claims that that's the full cut of the movie. We're missing so much, like the whole plane thing. We're missing so much in exposition of those characters. They cut Kiki Lane. Is it Kiki Lane? They cut her almost entirely her character for it. She only has like two major scenes, and she's a huge pivotal piece of that story. And they just cut her and they'd even include that on the Blu-ray. So it's just like there's just massive shit wrong with that movie. Massive.
What did you guys think of Buffy's Watcher's daughter.
Oh, Daisy Head.
Daisy She's Head.
Such an interesting looking actress.
Interesting looking actress.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that was his daughter.
Yeah, that's Daisy's
daughter. That's so funny.
Yeah. I just want everything good for that whole family because I've adored Anthony for years.
On Ted Lasso.
He's so good on Ted Lasso. This Darth Vader stuff that they're doing with him in season 3 has just it's just everything about it. His aesthetic, his wardrobe, just everything is so brilliant. But the thing I love about Ted Lasso is there's still such a humanizing quality to everybody involved still, even if they're assholes or pieces of shit. But I mean, with Anthony Stewart Head, I mean, I'll even throw it like I even still have a soft spot for Repo, and it's because of him. So, yeah. So to welcome another head on screen in the form of Daisy, she kind of nails it. She's got a really interesting aesthetic to her look. And I like that they didn't make her really monstrous until the very end.
She's also really great in Shadow and Bone.
Yeah.
Right. I've only seen the first couple episodes of it. It's interesting. It just hasn't fully grabbed me yet. But I mean, now that they're in season 2, and it's got Ben Barnes, and I kind of dig Ben Barnes.
He's really great in Shadow and Bone.
He's why Marina and I were watching Shadow and Bone.
Fair Among enough.
Now some other things. But yes, he was the big draw, I must admit. The ageless Ben Barnes. Yeah, though he
Dorian
finally
Gray.
Seems to be aging.
He was Dorian Gray at once. Right?
Is this is this a streamer or a theater telling all your friends to go and see it? Is it a streamer or is it a theater movie?
It feels like a theater movie.
Totally. I would agree. I think so too.
It's big. It's bombastic. Like it's fun. Like that's why we should be going to the theaters, is to have fun. On a broader degree. I mean, us, we still like to see some of the stuff that, you know, other people wouldn't deem theater worthy, but this is a theater worthy film from top to bottom.
I agree. And it's a lot of fun to watch it with the crowd. Like the crowd was really into it when we went to see it. And it was fun to have that group, like a bunch of people laughing at the same joke at the same time. There's an energy in the room. I think it actually might play better theatrically. I mean, I'll see it streaming at some point because Dan didn't go with me, but I think it's definitely a see it on the big screen.
And it doesn't have any drag points in it to me where I felt okay, move on.
Yeah.
Like, the pacing is really well done. Script is great. The character development is really, really good and really fun. And even if it hits cliches here and there, it still works.
I agree with that.
Hopefully we'll get one of these every couple of years and they'll expand the universe. And yeah, it's not like there's a lot of there's a lot they can build on here. Mm-hmm. And I've never played D&D in my life when I dug this film. And I think that pretty much says it all right there. Like it's surprisingly good.
Yeah.
I might have not liked it quite as much as you guys did. Like I was like, it's fine. This is a fine way to spend a couple hours, but it's also pretty forgettable for me. Like I'm not going to be thinking about this movie probably after this podcast.
I'll probably think about it when the next one comes out. I'll be like, oh yeah, that one. Okay.
The next I'll think about is, where's my Blu-ray, Paramount? Are you sending it to me on Blu-ray, please? Give me. That's my next thoughts about it.
But we do say see it, right?
Yeah.
General consensus.
Yeah.
The worst part of the film was the trailer for Transformers before it.
that
war crime of a Biggie Smalls sample going throughout the whole trailer.
Dude, I was like, they've made another Transformers movie. Why?
We need Beast Wars in it. And it's not Travis Knight.
Zero interest.
See, I give Bumblebee some credit because I like Travis Knight as a director and I like Hayley Steinfeld quite a bit.
But Bumblebee is different. Like that movie actually works, I thought. I love that movie. Like out of the Transformers movies, if you're going to call it part of that, because it kind of technically is, it's definitely the best of the bunch.
I think so too. I think it was kind of a savior within a bunch of Michael Bay shit.
Just
horrible shit.
Yes.
But this Rise of the Beasts, it's by Stephen Caple Jr. Does anyone remember who Stephen Caple Jr. is?
No.
Creed 2.
Really?
Creed 2. Yeah, really? Stephen Caple Jr.
Okay, I'm still not interested. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm still not interested.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that. And
good for him, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that I was... When I looked that up right after I first saw the trailer, I was like, wait a second, I know that name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the guy that did Creed 2 did Transformers 7.
Is it really 7?
Yeah, it's probably. God. Probably.
Oh, Jesus.
Because we had Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, Transformers Dark of the Moon, Transformers Age of Extinction, Transformers The Last Knight, Bumblebee.
How do you and remember this shit?
Right? I don't know either.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for Marina or Steve to tell us the Hobbs and Shaw or Tokyo Drift of the Transformers franchise. And I don't think it's going to happen because there's no
such thing. Yeah, it would be Bumblebee for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. For sure.
Hobbs and Shaw rules. Anyway.
No, it does not. Tokyo Drift is the best of the franchise, and I will take bat for that every day. Every day. Okay. Well, always happens. Always happens. Okay. Should we move on to John Wick Chapter 4?
Ooh, yes.
Guys.
I have not seen this yet, but please feel free.
Well, without giving spoilers, I'll say that last hour is like,
the entire thing is like, what is happening?
Which is, that's why you watch a John Wick movie.
I mean, it is the plot, so good.
Yeah, really, the plot doesn't matter. It's you're watching for like these intense action sequences that are choreographed like crazy, and you wonder how the hell they managed to do it.
If there was a camera on me during that movie, it would just been like, I would just hands my face like, yay, what's going on that now?
Pretty much me the entire time. I did have a couple of moments where I was like, wait, why is this scene here? It is totally unnecessary. However, you get Keanu on a horse in the desert. So, hey,
yes, so
there is that.
So Lawrence of Arabia, like so beautiful, like with the sun but behind them. Like
so unnecessary though. Come on.
Yeah.
Like that scene was so not needed, but it looks great and I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm. We also didn't need Scott Adkins in a fat suit.
No, I did. I literally was like, who the fuck is that? Yeah. I know who that is, but I don't know who it is.
Yeah.
So I looked it up after. I'm like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. But the fact that he would put that suit on and still be able to move like that.
Right.
Is fucking insane. It's insane.
I love the fact that he would like fight and then he would get scared and run away and then he would fight again and then he would get scared and he would run away and then he'd fight again. It's just like, yes.
Well, Bill messaged me after he saw it. He's like, you're in for a treat. I'm like, I'm going later. I'm excited. So good.
Does Donnie Yen almost steal that movie, though? Because for me, he was just so damn good in it that he just almost steals it away in many spots.
Well, he is Donnie Yen.
He's Donnie Yen. He's just got a certain quality to him.
My odd favorite scene in the film is at the end where they're... Bill Skarsgård character walks up to him and starts talking to Donnie Yen. He's like, fuck off!
Yeah.
Just out of the blue, just tells him to fuck off. So good.
And Bill Skarsgård is quickly rising up the ranks.
He's my favorite.
He's so damn good.
He's my favorite of the family.
Yeah, yeah. I really, really, really starting to like him. I would love the Vikings brother to get more work because I do enjoy him quite a bit too. But yeah, Bill is rising up the ranks. Like I already have like an infinite love for Stellan and Alexander, like just huge love for them. But I mean, just in the last 6 months and I'm not going to say that he's a huge part of Barbarian, but his work in Barbarian is so red herring-y and I really love it. And then this marquee, the Marquise work here, and just this ruthlessly suave character. Yep. And the decadence all around him and stuff is just so perfect.
Yeah, this movie looks amazing. Like they all look great, but this one seems to have upped the ante even more. The whole they're in Japan, I think it is the oh, that all of that neon is just so beautifully captured. And that action sequence in the glass room, or the room of glass, whatever you want to call it, is just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
How long that goes for. But like, it feels so kinetic the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Like at some point I said to Dan, I started counting the reloads because the guns actually run out of ammo. I'm like, who thinks of this in a movie? Like mm-hmm. a movie that has this many weapons and this much shooting, and they actually think to reload. Like, yeah. This is the intricacy of stunt people. Like, please and give them the Oscars.
Those reload scenes add like tension.
They do
to each like it's
they
it's
totally do
really well constructed, and I think you have to hand it that down to just these movies are made by choreographers and people that have been doing this all of their lives, so they've made it into an art form, because that's exactly what they've turned the stunt industry into, an art form for these John Wick movies. And it's like we haven't seen stuff like this, like stunt performers being as filmmakers, since like H.B. Halecki and the Gone in 60 Seconds original movies and Junkman and stuff like that. So, albeit with a different part of the industry, but yeah, that's, I really feel that's what the John Wick movies are celebrating.
I fully agree. And I'm here for all of it. Just give me all of it. It's so good.
I do hope, like, because I haven't seen it yet, I'm hoping that Lance Reddick got a good send off for his final film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say so.
It's best that we don't go further into that one.
Yeah, but, no spoilers on that one.
Yeah, but yeah, I think they did a nice thing for him, because Concierge is such a huge part of the lore in the world in this film, and Reddick and Ian McShane are such cogs, central cogs in that. So you have to treat them right.
Yeah. And Donnie Yen turns 60 in July.
That's insane.
It's like his choreography in this film is like Singing in the Rain kind of stuff. Like it's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
And Keanu, I think you said he was like 57, 58.
Yeah.
Also doing a lot of work in this film. And I'm thinking, you know, how long can they do this for? But Donnie Yen, I think, probably do his 2070.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, Tom Cruise is also, isn't he 50? He's 59 as well, right?
Yeah, he's in, yeah.
And he's still doing all his stuff for Mission Impossible. And
I think it's a little bit different. Like, it's still within that realm of almost impossibility. Like, how did these guys do this? Or, like, these people do this? Because it's not just guys. Look at Michelle Yeoh. But it is really impressive that they're managing to push on. And it's not like they've just been doing this for the last like couple of years. I mean, these folks have been doing this for decades. Yeah. Like, this is Donnie Yen's career has all been pretty much this. So has, you know, the last 20 years of Keanu Reeves's career for the most part. Tom Cruise, the same, like the last 20 or 30 years has been all action all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact that they're still able to do this at this level is just nuts. I love behind the scenes stuff, and what I've loved over the last, especially since, I guess maybe not so much with the first one, but I guess since John Wick 2, there's been a lot of like behind the scenes how they've done stuff, and it's really great to see the training that goes into this, and to hear Chad and some of the other some of the stunt team talking about like the amount of preparation that goes into making this stuff, because it's not like they're starting, you know, 3 months before production to start to practice. They're starting like a year out, because this stuff is so tightly choreographed, and it comes across on screen. I mean, I remember when John Wick came out, like the thing that I was impressed was you could see the action. Like, we had been for like a decade, we'd had all these action sequences that were cut like every 10 or 15 seconds. You couldn't see anything. So it's like eye strain. But this, like John Wick was like, okay, let's slow things down. Yes, there's still a lot of action, but we're going to show you all of it. And I love that that's kicked off kind of like a resurgence of that type of action film, because that's what like makes them really fun, right? Is being able to see the work on screen. So for me, like, they could keep making these and I would be so happy. So happy. And for me, like, this is going in the complete opposite direction of Fast and Furious, which has gone from that sort of like racing in the, it's about the cars and it's about what you can do in the cars, to these like kind of like super ridiculous movies that are just kind of like everything else. That's, for me, that's what's missing out of the latter part of the Fast and Furious franchise. I miss the practical in the car. Show me like the act, like it doesn't have to be mind blowing because I know how hard that was to do, but I guess people like shock value. I don't know. They seem to also love John Wick. So, hey,
well, I don't know how they can keep making the John Wick movies though. Cause it's like every single one ups the ante in terms of what they're doing on screen. And like at a certain point you're like, how are you going to top this? But I thought that about three. So, and you're saying four blows your mind even further. So,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like Steve said, that final hour is just insanity.
So crazy. And what it is, I mean, to showing these action films is just finally we're bringing it back. We're getting a wide angle of seeing some of these fight scenes and stuff, which we kind of have to blame on Paul Greengrass in the Bourne movies for being really up way too close, so many different cuts, and it's dizzying. Some of the lessons that other action filmmakers took from watching Bourne Supremacy and Ultimatum and stuff were just some of the wrong ideas and stuff, and like, why are we so in close of some of these fight scenes? Can we bring it back so we can see what the hell's going on? And like, I feel like for a second there, even though I don't want to praise anything with Gina Carano in it all, but Haywire started to get it a little bit correctly, adopting the same Bourne style but bringing it back a little bit, so kind of showing it in a full frame in a fight scene. Like I the fight scene in the beginning between Gina Carano and Channing Tatum is a perfect example of just letting the scene breathe on and not getting up close with 18,000 cuts. But people took the wrong idea from the Bourne movies, and it kind of muddled action for a while.
Yeah, you're totally right. Cause you're right. That's exactly where it started. People did miss what was interesting about what Paul Greengrass was doing with those action movies.
Yeah.
Go figure.
Yeah. Did you right.
Did you guys know that John Wick 1 was an independent film?
Yeah.
That Lionsgate picked up at like a festival.
Yeah.
And it proceeded to do this, like,
right,
other than maybe like Paranormal Activity and maybe Blair Witch, like what has done that in the last 20-30 years,
especially for like Lionsgate?
Yeah, like that's right. Like I think it made what, like 75 million this weekend, last weekend.
Well,
like,
yeah,
that's pretty big for a movie that they didn't even like pay for.
Oh, exactly. And everything that Lionsgate has paid for and tried to make a giant franchise, aside from the Twilight movies, like Hunger Games fizzled in the last two movies. Yep. Like Catching Fire was probably the pinnacle of that series. And then Mockingjay 1 and 2 are fucking boring. I'm sorry. They're just boring, boring films. And then the Divergent movies, like what the hell?
Like they fumbled that so badly because the books are really good.
None of those worked.
No, like they didn't.
None of them worked, to the point that they didn't even finish the story.
That's what's really sad. Right? I feel bad for Shailene Woodley.
Well, they were gonna like, we don't really want to make this in the movie and put all the money towards making a movie, so let's do a series. And the rest of the cast was like, fuck you. Yeah. And they quit. And then they just mothballed it. Like it's gone. Yeah. So but I don't know. They're trying it again. They're gonna try Hunger Games again. But near the end of the year.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw
that. The poster is amazing. I love the poster. It's gorgeous, but
I just don't
fucking cares.
Well, this is it. Like that, those fans have moved on.
Yeah, we don't care about Susan Collins and Katniss and all of this shit anymore. We don't care.
But it's not even about Katniss. It's like the prequel about Snow. No one cares.
Yeah.
I don't understand where that's even coming from.
It's just green light happy, you know what I mean?
Like, they're trying to Harry Potter the shit out of it. That's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's just it was never enough to sustain in the first place, as we saw.
No,
you know,
dude, why don't you do this with Twilight? I want more Twilight. God damn it.
Yeah, they're gonna do the origin of Forks. Yeah,
which is basically nothing.
Yeah, exactly. But it was a coastal town.
That's right. And then the vampires showed up.
Yeah. Hey! Yeah, exactly. Well, no, let's just do Jasper's origin story again in expanded way. I'd be okay with which it. Is essentially yeah, sure. Bill from True Blood anyway, right? It's essentially the same thing, right? Just be like, suck it.
Okay. Oh, the cross worlds. I'm liking this plan. I'm liking this plan. All right.
Steve's going to be rich one day doing all this stuff.
I totally think so.
He's going to leave us. And
so we're happy with John Wick 4.
Oh, yeah.
Do we say it's a big screen movie? I totally
yeah,
think it's a big screen movie.
I don't know how you. I think you're at a disservice if you had to experience any of these films. And just like, oh my God, if you had to watch this on an airplane or something for the first time, like I feel sorry for you. Or you're watching on a laptop or like on your iPhone, like Christopher Nolan intended. I think you got gypped. You got movie gypped.
Oh my God. I love it. I did see a lady watch, Top Gun Maverick on an airplane. Like, on a flight,
that's too
on
meta.
A flight from LA. That's on a flight meta. From LA. You know, it was great. I looked over and like she was sitting in front of me and I could see the reflection in the window. I'm like, is she really watching Top Gun? Like, yep, she is. When I looked up when we were about to land, like the credits were rolling. I'm like, perfect leg.
Yeah, right.
But not the way to see it.
Can you imagine white knuckling in your airplane chair for that final scene? You're like, I don't know who they're fighting, but this is crazy.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I have to say, we did a presentation on the making of that movie, like the visual effects of the film, because mm-hmm. it has no visual effects, right? Mm-hmm. And it was probably one of the most interesting presentations I've seen in a long, long time. And I'm so sad that they didn't get more of an opportunity to showcase the work that they did, because they did a lot of work on the visual effects. Like, there's lots of practical flying. But the amount of stuff that they added is really, really impressive. So if anybody has a chance to see them talk about the making of the movie, I highly recommend it. It's a really, really great talk. So just putting that out there.
There has to be a lot of equipment eraser and stuff like that in that movie.
There's a lot of they do a lot of skinning in mm-hmm. that movie where they're flying a different jet. And then they make it an F-18.
Right.
And then like the Chinese plane and the Russian plane, they're all skinned. So they were all, they were flying something totally different. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there was actually a lot of equipment addage, because when some of the flight, they couldn't fly any planes with actual ammo. That was a big no-no from the army. So basically they've had to add all of that. And like just weird stuff, like some of the scenes that are actually on a green screen mm-hmm. and they had to add a canopy, and the canopy work was actually really interesting because it gets super technical at that point because they're talking about how the military doesn't use regular plastic and it's not regular glass. And they can't tell you because it's top secret. So you have to try to figure out how to make the glass scratch because it's not like brand new glass. It was, like I say, uber geeky, but it's very, very interesting. And if you're really into that movie, it's, or just into visual effects in general, it's a really great presentation to catch if you're able to see it anywhere.
I think it's funny that we're almost at 1 year date of when Top Gun Maverick came out. We're still talking about it.
I'm going to talk about it forever.
We're still talking about Tom Cruise and just Top Gun in general. We're not talking about Joseph Kaczynski though.
No, and I like Joseph Kaczynski.
I love Joseph Kaczynski.
I love his work.
And but it's just like he doesn't really get that the praise of the whole situation. And it's just like I think he deserves some of it. I think he's a good team. He's a good Tom Cruise team, just like Christopher McQuarrie is a good Tom Cruise team. And he doesn't even get brought up as much as Christopher McQuarrie does. So it's just like,
No. Well, give him his flowers,
you know.
Did McQuarrie do the was the first movie that he did with Tom Cruise that adaptation from that book where everybody was complaining that Tom
Jack
Cruise
Reacher?
Wasn't tall enough? Was that the first time they worked together?
No, because I think McQuarrie wrote Valkyrie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Though, was McQuarrie on the set for Valkyrie, or would he have gotten frustrated by the shit going on in that movie and fucking left?
Well, yeah. Okay, sorry, we went totally off track. I just realized. Sorry.
Okay, so I'm gonna verify the IMDb quality of Steve's brain, though. Like, your
right?
Detail retention is right up there, buddy.
Thank you.
Not to like keep on the train here, but how pissed off do you think the Oscar people were when Tom Cruise is like, "No, I'm not going to show up."
Pissed. Especially when they're struggling to find mainstream relevance.
And one of your major stars decides they don't want to be there, even though they produced one of the movies nominated for Best Picture. Right?
You're gonna save movies, but you can't save network television, Tom.
too good.
Maybe when he stops making Mission Impossible movies and decides that he's okay for TV now, maybe
that's
then
never gonna decide. Happen.
You don't think so?
Is never going to be a TV star. Look, I was even because I've recently, the wife and I have been watching 1883 to continue on our Yellowstone thing. And Tom Hanks shows up in the beginning of episode 2. And I double taked. I was like, the fuck?
Yeah.
No. And I paused it. I'm like, we both looked at it and we're like, that's Tom Hanks. What? So, like, I mean, and I was floored by that, but will we ever see that from Tom Cruise? Not a chance in hell.
No.
Not a chance. And he's always been a movie star. He'll always be a movie star. He's one of those old world people that probably definitely poo-poos TV. Nah, not my thing. I'll let the other people do it.
The sad part about this is I think at this point, the only Oscar he's ever going to get is going to be an honorary Oscar.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't.
Because they missed their chance.
No. Yeah, exactly. And if you weren't going to award him for Magnolia, then you're not going to.
Yeah. At this point, it's over, I think.
Yeah.
I know, Bill, you've watched Tetris. Steve, am I going to assume that you've seen Tetris?
I've seen Tetris as well, yes.
Melissa, have you seen Tetris?
No.
Is it okay if we talk about Tetris without spoiling? Absolutely,
sure.
Guys, what did you think?
Spoil away. I don't really care if I see Tetris. So,
but no, you do, because Tetris is actually a lot of fun. It's actually pretty good.
Like, it's an interesting story at its core.
It is.
I think Taron Egerton is the movie, though.
Does, 120%.
I think... Yeah, and I'm not going to say that Taron's underrated, but
he is a little bit
underrated, totally, because he carries so much of the projects he does. I'll give a caveat to Blackbird, the limited series that was on Apple TV Plus, because Paul Walter Hauser also carries that.
Yeah,
that show is great. I have such a deep love for that man that it's just everything he shows up in, and you're like, you're fucking incredible every time. You just give it every time. But Taron is a guy that, I mean, what, we saw him for the first time in Kingsman, and he really does a great job of carrying that movie as well, albeit in a cast of character actors that knock it out of the park every time. But he holds his own in that movie, and then continued to beyond that. I mean, Rocket Man had the kitsch of being an Elton John story, but Taron's incredible in that film. Just incredible. And Tetris is the same way, because you really like him. Like,
you're really rooting for him from the get-go.
Absolutely. And the tension of the situations play really well. The absurdity of what it did to the Soviet Union is never lost on you.
Yeah.
And the story at its core is really, really fascinating. And I have to give it to John S. Baird, the director. I really like how flashy he's been in his past in his film, because Filth is a movie that I don't think gets talked about enough. It's such a gross and disturbing little film, but with another driven performance by a great actor that carries films, James McAvoy, and John S. Baird created this insane Irvine Welsh nightmare. And then to do that in a more straightforward story, like the story of Tetris, I think he was like unknowingly the perfect choice to make this film.
Remind me never to try to license a game in Russia in the 1980s. Like, holy crap, there's some pretty intricate stuff going on here.
Right.
I had no idea. Like, no. I knew that it was made by a Russian programmer, and then it was on my Game Boy. And then I'm like, okay, Tetris is awesome. I had no idea this. It's a pretty cool story. It's very fast paced, doesn't slow down. It's a very quick watch. Taron Egerton's great, and everybody's great in the film. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a surprise. I didn't really even know what this was until I, you know, watched it, and I was it's better than I thought it was going to be. And I'm happy for that.
How about that casting on Gorbachev too? I was like, holy fuck, did they clone Gorbachev for this movie?
It certainly looked like it was really impressive.
Yeah. But it's funny to think that the sale of something Russian created to the Western world was just that much of a crack in the belief system, in the whole structure, to make them crumble that quick. Like, that was like one of the chinks in the armor that kind of like broke everything away from them. And it's so insane to think that. And it's just to the point of like celebrating one man over celebrating the entire country, you know. And it's just, it broke them, and how scared they were about it too. And how their fear turns into just militant bravado and stuff. And it's a fascinating story.
Yeah, I think one of the things that the movie really gets right is it captures just how broken the system already was, mm-hmm. and how, like you say, like this one really insignificant thing like made it crumble. The other thing I thought was really interesting was how it managed. They managed to really capture the feeling of the period and the political intrigue that was going on, not only in Russia, but also in the UK with the Mirror guy, because that was also like a big thing at that time where, you know, they were stealing money basically from their employees, and that was like a big scandal. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the whole timeline of the video game system wars was really interesting, how it kind of played in the background with Nintendo and Sega. So I thought that they captured like a lot of like the cultural milestones and even the political milestones in this kind of just passing way. It's like, oh yeah, this is happening. Mm-hmm. But if you lived through it, you're like, oh yeah, this was all happening at the same time. And you just have forgotten because it was however many years ago. But yeah, like Bill, I actually didn't realize that Tetris was made by a Russian programmer. And then Dan said to me, you've never picked it up on the music. I'm like, no, I only just played Tetris. I don't know.
I will say that the makeup on Roger Allam was just not great.
No, it was not. It was not.
The prosthetics and stuff on his face were just like very.
It didn't really work. He basically couldn't move it. Yeah. Like, clearly they didn't do a very good job there. So he was trying to emote with just like his eyes and the movement of his lips, and it was like, eh.
And he was a great actor. Like, I love Roger Allam and a lot of stuff, but it's like, yeah, it wasn't working for him.
Yeah. I really liked the little 8-bit chase sequence. I thought that was really cool. I'm like, well, that's kind of fun. Unnecessary, but fun.
Again, I feel like that's that John S. Baird stuff coming through, though.
Yeah.
Because he loves his gimmick stuff. So.
But it kind of works. Yeah. I mean, it plays into the themes and the style of the movie. So, hey, I'm okay with it. And it was very gray. Mm-hmm. Everything was very, very muted until like the last scene. And then there's color. I'm like, okay. I can kind of go with that.
Well, especially when you go to Russia, you have to be gray and muted.
Yes, apparently.
Like the screen is in white
when and you're red an American and vodka. Made
movie. Yeah, yes.
Exactly.
Pretty much.
You are not safe until you leave Russia.
Pretty much.
Good almost last line of the film. Mm-hmm.
I did like that. And I don't know if that's how it played out, that whole like airplane sequence towards the end. I was actually like, oh my God, are they going to get away? Like, what is happening? So I thought that was actually played quite well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you always knew they were going to get out, but I thought I didn't know how it was going to happen.
Well, Marina, the game came out.
Can I just give you the finger again? Closer, I might slap you.
I love the pause.
But yeah, good movie.
Yeah, I agree. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Guys, I caught up with Creed 3.
Oh. And
it was good. Mm-hmm. It was really, really good. I quite enjoyed it. I think I only wanted to mention it to say that one of the things I don't remember us talking about this when you guys talked about the film. The thing I probably liked the most about it is that at the end of the day, there's not really a bad guy in this movie, even though Jonathan Majors at times is played as like the villain. He really isn't. Like, there's really no villains here.
No.
I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, because Damien is, I mean, he's been locked up, right? So it's like the decisions he makes and the betrayal that he feels is believable. At the end of the day, it all kind of rolls with that character. And to end this story, because I believe this is the end of Adonis Creed's story, it gives a connective tissue to end Adonis's story as well, because it's something towards like stuff that was alluded to in the first film with his horrible shitty upbringing, right, and it, being in and out of foster system. It bookends it all, and it gives closure, so, and gives closure without Rocky involved. That's I mean, to have the end of your franchise story not involve the person that kicked it off, other than being talked about in fleetingly, is ballsy, and they pulled it off. And for this to be Michael B. Jordan's directorial debut, like, man, what you got next? I'm so down.
Yeah, it's very, very impressive what he manages to do. And some of those fight sequences are really good. Like, really, really good.
And he
drew a lot from anime for the fight sequences.
I could believe that. There's one thing that it's a little divisive near the end of the movie. In that fight with Damien and Donnie, where everything kind of bleeds away and it's just them.
I like that.
I was going to say
that's definitely the anime vibe going in. Yeah. But they do leave the door open for another Creed movie,
I don't think
with
so.
With his daughter?
No. Young Drago.
I would do a Young Drago. I really like that they brought him back.
I thought that was fun.
Especially when he gets belted in the face and then he just smiles. Like, he's like, yes, that's what I want. And I'm like, oh, that's what I like too.
What else do you guys have? Anything else you want to talk about?
I just watched How to Blow Up a Pipeline last night.
Woo. Was it good?
Yeah, I dug it. It's just tension. Such good tension. And so... It's such a like a low pro thriller, and it's funny on IMDb they list it partially as a Western as well, and I need to take another pass at it so I can figure out where those themes tie into it, but the ending I think is, it's so ballsy in its ambiguity that like I feel like a lot of it you have to just kind of extrapolate what happens to these characters. But yeah, it is an angry activist movie, and it's the angry activist movie that we need right now. Especially with all the Standing Rock stuff and everything that we've seen on the news and followed for the last 15 years. It's kind of a smart movie to do. I feel like it's, I kept thinking about an Alexander Skarsgård movie, called The Hummingbird Project when I was watching it. Here and there, I kept thinking about that movie. I think How to Blow Up a Pipeline movie. This movie is brash. It's original. The guy that made the film, he made a movie called Cam before, which I've never seen. And now I really want to check out the scene. It's more of a horror film about this cam girl that finds out that somebody's basically cloned her. Like, she's... there's another version of her doing cam stuff as well. And if that was this guy's first movie, I really want to check it out.
It's good.
Is it good? Yeah, I really want to see it. It was a Shudder original, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say Netflix, but yeah, it's definitely a streamer.
Okay. Yeah, I want to see it.
That's the that's the most recent thing I watch. And Air. I really, really liked Air.
I want to see that, and Dan refuses to go, so I may have to see it by myself.
It operates a part of the sports movie genre that's in like sports adjacent, like it's like in the Moneyball area. It's really smart. It's really character driven. The script is great. The cast is phenomenal. Chris Messina, I think, almost steals this film as Michael Jordan's agent. He's so damn good in it. And I forget who the actor is that plays Michael's dad, but he's goddamn charming in it. And I forgot about what happened to James Jordan, that he was gunned down. I think in the late 90s, he was basically murdered in his own car.
Yeah, and then Jordan quit basketball a week later and went and played baseball for 2 years.
Yeah.
I didn't know that that's what had happened.
Yeah, I forgot about that. And the way they bring it all home is so well done. And Matt Damon is goddamn good in this one. Ben Affleck also. Oh, and it's shot by Robert Richardson, who shoots the fuck out of this movie. It's so good. It's so gorgeous looking. Like, some of those close-ups, I was just like, ooh, this is pristine here.
Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah. Okay, Dan is in Vegas, so I might have to go to the movies on Monday.
This is a return for Ben Affleck, though. This is like, I mean, he's the last time he was out making films, he made Live by Night, which was a stumble. And I think that this is on the caliber of Gone Baby Gone in the Town. Like, that's how much I enjoyed this film.
I really like Ben Affleck, like in general, as an actor, as a director. I think he's really good. He's really talented. So I'm really happy to hear that this one is great, because it looked really interesting. It's kind of came out of nowhere, though. Like, I didn't know it was coming. And all of a sudden there's these advertisements for Air, and I'm like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was going to be a streamer. I thought it was going to be like Prime Video or something like that.
I thought it's
on Prime in 2 weeks.
Oh, in 2 weeks. Oh. Okay.
I think so.
I don't like that they've added a secondary title to it, though, because now it's called Air Courting a Legend. And I hate that secondary title so much.
I just ignore them in general. I'm like, whatever.
I saw it too. I really liked it, but don't compare it to Moneyball, because Moneyball is a masterpiece.
No, I wouldn't. I'm just saying that it's in that category. Moneyball sort of is like, the best. Moneyball is the best, and it's really hard to hit that bar because it's so goddamn good.
Yeah, and if you're comparing it to Moneyball, it's not in the same league. It's good. I just think it's missing something. It's like the ultimate dad movie. Your dad's going to love this movie. It's like the Huey Lewis in the News.
So I'm going to love it, because apparently I love all movies that dads love.
Yeah, but no, it's good. And as you said, I could watch Matt Damon curse people out for like 6 or 7 straight hours and not be bored.
I could listen to him on the phone with Chris Messina just burning back and forth.
Yeah.
Forever.
So good.
Forever.
Chris Messina must have been on set for one day.
Right.
Doesn't leave that desk. Barely even like changes posture. Films like 3 scenes and just kills.
It just a shark. An absolute shark of a role. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's definitely really watchable. And I think, it's a really likable film. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's great. A lot of people are saying it's great. I just don't think it's great.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, will this movie get remembered in award season? And I don't think it will. Maybe Robert Richardson.
Yeah.
And maybe the script, maybe the Alex Convery script. But acting wise, I think Damon's a slight long shot. Affleck might be a slight long shot, because his Phil Knight's really good. Viola Davis is good. But it's almost becoming standard for Viola Davis in these performances, these strong performances that she gives. Some of them are just feel very standard. And I'm sorry, like, if she didn't get at all recognized or even talked about for Woman King, which was a bit of a different role for her.
Yeah.
As much as it's a powerful role, it is a different powerful role for her. Yeah, I don't think Air is enough to propel her to be in the conversation. But I mean, also, it's also only April, March. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
we'll see what the rest of the year has to offer.
I think it's an early 2023 favorite, but I don't think it's an early awards favorite. No.
Anything else, Bill? What did you just finish watching before we started recording?
I've seen a few things. I saw 65.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I watched this.
Me too.
It's not bad.
It's also not good.
It's not good, but it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's really, really quick.
Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm.
It's a fast watch. It's not a lot of bad. Like, I didn't groan or like make fun of the film when I'm watching it. I'm like, this is just a very feels like studio tampered film that is it cut so incredibly to the bone because they just wanted to get it out. Mm-hmm. It moves really quick. It's not bad. Adam Driver's fine. Mm-hmm. It ends like there's like it just ends like there's nothing. It's less than seven. It's like 77 minutes without credits.
Yeah.
Like what the hell? When was the last time you saw that?
Never.
It's not bad. It's just, it's just not great.
It's a movie that feels like it would have been made in the mid 90s along this, like that Ray Liotta, No Escape and stuff. Like it feels like that type of a film. They just didn't have the money or technology to make something like that in that time. And that's, I think that's where I appreciate it on that level of it was definitely, it was a movie that I would have loved in that time.
Yeah.
And I kind of transplanted it to now. And yeah, I don't know. Adam Driver with sci-fi weaponry against dinosaurs in like a survival setting. I don't know. I dug it.
No, I mean, I will say this. I thought, considering that it probably didn't cost a whole lot of money to make, mm-hmm. I thought they made really great use of the money for the money shots. Like the dinosaurs, when you actually get to see them, they do like, they used their assets very, very well. I just found that kind of like meddling. It's really fast watch, but I was kind of bored by it. So I don't know.
Two Chloe Coleman movies on the same episode this month.
It's the kind of movie somebody's going to find on Netflix in 2 years at like 3 o'clock in the morning, really baked and just totally dig it.
Yeah, it's going to catch a word of mouth for sure when it hits streaming.
I think so too.
And again, for the reasons Bill said, it's quick.
It is.
It's a super quick ride. There's no point where it slows down.
Yeah, it's not draggy. That's for sure. Like it's nonstop. Like you're always on the move, like literally. But it does. It is a fun watch. I don't know. It was just very like, whatever. Okay. I'm not going to remember it. It's going to be like that Adam Driver movie with the dinosaurs and electric guns. That's what I'm going to remember it as. Mind you, it's only called 65, so maybe not.
As far as like a personal like screening connection to it, when I saw it, someone in the front row decided to bring their kids to it. It's not a kids movie.
Why?
So there's like literally the killing and mutilation of a baby dinosaur in it. So like, don't bring your kids, you fucking idiots.
Yeah.
I don't judge other people's parenting, but sometimes I just, come on.
I got a couple more. Scream 1206.
Uh-oh.
Meaning Scream 6.
Uh-oh.
Sucks.
Oh.
The amount that they expect you to like suspend disbelief in this film just drove me fucking insane. Like, I can't spoil why I'm saying this, but this movie's bullshit. I can't tell you why because it's a massive spoiler, but it's bullshit. Next film. Speaking of bullshit, Shazam.
Okay. The gloves are about to come off. Go for it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
This movie feels like it has no idea what it's doing. It's just stupid scene after stupid scene of Zachary Levi being the fish out of water for no reason. The kids are like left behind at times when they should be up front. It looks bad. Zachary Levi is like 50 something.
Well, that's true.
It doesn't work.
In a weird anti-vaxxer or something.
Like even Helen Mirren can't class this piece of shit up. So terrible.
Did you like the first movie though?
Yeah, I liked the first movie. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was fun.
And I thought this was like right on par with the first movie. Like I felt I agree.
Very similar.
I agree. Like it's not amazing, but like compared, I mean, look where it came from. It came from Shazam. And I think that the two movies are pretty much the same. Like to me, they felt like the only thing about Shazam was that it was a surprise because I didn't know what to expect. And so this one, I had like a little bit of a bar and it more than met it. Like I had a really good time. I actually think it looks really good. I like the visual effects in it. I think it looks great. I still don't think it's a great movie, but I thought it was perfectly fine and totally on par with Shazam. I mean, I would have watched the third one if they made another one.
I don't know what the fuck's happening with the DC universe now. Because now
the DC universe is in shambles.
And now we got this trailer for Blue Beetle.
I said to Dan, DC needs, and they're going to need way more help than they have. Mm-hmm. They are in fucking shambles, and I blame The Rock for all of it.
I know. The weird shit with The Rock over the last year has just, like, it even affects this movie.
Everything. Because
there's the post-credit scene on this one, which was supposed to be The Rock, I want to say.
Yep.
But instead it's Harcourt and what the hell's Steve Agee's character's name? Economist. Recruiting him to the Justice Society because The Rock wouldn't allow Hawkman to be used.
Yeah.
That's what the rumor is. And then Zachary Levi backed it up. Yep. Saying that, The Rock was the reason.
Rambling, like, that total rambling bullshit.
Why are you guys pulling punches on each other?
Yeah, like, well, because they're dead in that in the DC universe. Like they're both out, and now they're just throwing punches. The Rock at this point is like, "Well, I fucked it all up, so I'm just stepping back.
Yeah,
I'm not it.
I even gave Henry Cavill false hope. All this stuff, like, oh boy, I like The Rock a lot. But this was not his. This has not been his year.
No.
I think his public image got torn.
Quite a bit. I've lost a lot of respect, and I'm pissed because I like DC. Mm-hmm. I didn't mind the direction that Zack Snyder, the dark everything. I'm okay with it. Like I really am. I do like Zack Snyder and his work. But man, like it kind of looked like they were finally moving in a different direction with Patty Jenkins and Black Adam. And it's like, okay, so they're trying something new. And then the whole thing is just imploded. It's imploded. Like the whole thing is dead. Yep. Mind you, I think at this point Marvel might be dead too. So hey, I might be the only person that's happy about this.
to be fair, I've said this from the beginning. I am superhero movie out. Like,
yeah, I think that's where we're at.
And I watched this film. I'm just like I can't do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
this is killing me. Like I just it's and there's more to look forward to. The Flash and Guardians and at least Guardians is probably going to be funny.
Yeah. I love James Gunn.
I'm actually looking forward to The Flash because they're bringing back my favorite Batman. So,
yes. But Marina, they fucked that one up too. It was supposed to come out before fucking Shazam.
I know, okay? We had other issues at play here.
Yeah. I'm kind of amazed that they're still releasing it.
After. So am I.
Ezra Miller, actually.
I hope Miller is not at the premiere. I hope. You know what I mean? There's just so much I hope.
Did you guys see that photo on Twitter? Of that dude who went to a early screening on The Flash, and there's some dude sitting beside him. And he's like, they're like, start talking, and the guy takes his mask off, and it's Tom Cruise.
What?
What?
Yeah. And it's this dude just takes a selfie with Tom Cruise, like, oh, yeah, hanging with Tom Cruise at the Flash premiere.
The fuck?
Some random dude on Twitter. Why can't
that be me? It's not that deep fake Tom Cruise.
And supposedly Tom Cruise loved it. So what does that mean?
But Tom Cruise loves all the big action movies.
Yeah, totally.
Did Tom Cruise love his own movie, The Mummy? Did he love that? with Cockney Russell Crowe.
It's so bad. On
Dr. Hyde in it.
All right. Yeah, it was on TV the other day, and we watched about 5 minutes of it. Jesus Christ. It does not hold.
The Dark Universe? The launch of the Dark Universe?
I was going to say, what was that universe called? Yeah, they killed him right away.
Right? Javier Bardem didn't even get a chance to enter the universe. He was already canceled.
Okay, friends, I got one more film.
Okay.
This is the Super Mario Brothers film.
Oh, God.
If you had asked me before the movie started, hey, Bill, go write this script. See how much you're going to get right. I'd get 95% of this right. Mm-hmm. It is so by the book. Mm-hmm. It deviates from nothing. The thing that made the Lego movie really cool is that you think, oh, it's just going to be a movie about Legos. No, it's a movie about other things. This is playing on people's nostalgia for something. And this is the true review of the Super Mario Brothers. The kid beside me fell asleep 20 minutes in. If they didn't have this kid, they didn't have me either. And I played all these damn games. This movie sucks. And it made $500 million in 5 days.
Hi. Yeah. Everybody has missed the point here. It's an Illumination movie.
Yeah.
They always make money.
You know what?
Hands down.
I haven't liked an Illumination film.
They're not made for you. They don't care about you.
I hate Sing. I hate all those films.
Yeah, so, Secret Life of Pets. Like, none of them are made for me. But you know what? Yeah. They know their audience very, very well.
Yeah. It was all just about finding Easter eggs. That entire film was about.
I just think it looks nice.
Cue Steve to tell me I'm wrong. Let's go.
I am fine with it. It's paper thin, but I think it's meant to be paper thin. This one's definitely meant for the kids. It's also a vast improvement over the fever dream that we got in 1993.
Whoa, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you know, this is the proper representation. Yeah, like it's not going to reunite Israel and Palestine. Like, it's not meant to be anything beyond what it is.
Okay, but can I prove my point?
Yeah,
the first 10 minutes of the film deviates from the story.
Yes, it does,
and it's kind of interesting.
Yes, it does, and the fact that this is an origin story, right? Because Mario and Luigi are actual full on human Italian plumbers that are really playing up the Italian stereotype just for, like, that's the joke that they're that it's a me, a Mario, like, that's all just for their, like, ad campaigns type thing, and then they're just like normal Italian Americans, assumingly Americans, they're just Italians, I don't know. I don't know, they're, it just, I see, I don't hate all of Illumination's work. The Minions movies don't really work for me, but they're not for me, like, that's definitely for your, you know, 10 and under audience, and I think that a lot of Super Mario plays to that degree as well by also serving the nostalgia to the adults, but again, it's all kind of paper thin. And I just kind of enjoyed it for what it was. It's definitely made for my kid, because my kid's going to latch on to every single reference in this film. Like, it's like she's mining gold. So, yeah.
Right on. That's it from me.
Melissa, anything you want to?
Well, I've been stuck at home mostly, so luckily I've had a few people send me links to things, which was very nice. I won't incriminate anyone. And I've also
been catching up.
I was trying to wait to myself. Out yourself.
Yeah. I'll do it myself.
I don't fucking care.
I've been catching up on stuff that I missed for I don't even know why. Like, recently watched Marcel's The Shell with Shoes On, which I had not seen in its original theatrical run, which was really stupid of me because it's delightful and charming and made me fall in love even more with Isabella Rossellini, which I did not think was possible. I recently watched Rye Lane, which is now on Disney Plus, which is premiered at Sundance. It's a rom-com. It's lovely. It is gorgeous. It is so, like, wall-to-wall color saturated. Like, the color work in this film is just insanely, amazingly gorgeous. And it's nice to see a film that is, like, this is a London that we don't see in the movies, because it's a very colorful, vibrant, beautiful London, which is definitely not what we normally get when you see London on screen. And it was great to see a film that features, you know, black leads, where it's not that's not the point of the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, know? They're not token. It's like it just happens to be a story that has universal. Yeah.
These are full characters. They're full people. They're people that you feel like you kind of know, and you get invested in their relationship really early on. So yeah, it was. I thought it was. It's just a really nice, kind of light, fun rom-com that is shot like crazy. It's so gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Like I couldn't get over the colors. And I'm really excited to see what Rain does next, because this is her first film. Also, Colin Firth has a tiny cameo as a burrito seller.
Yeah.
And I want to know why. Like, I want to know how this ended up happening, but I thought it was hilarious. And if you're going to, you know, if you're going to be a new British rom-com director, what you want is a Colin Firth cameo in your film, really.
Yes.
Seems like probably the best endorsement you can get. But yeah, so I thought that was really fun. I also watched on Netflix. So weirdly, this like 2019 movie has like kind of like blown up a bit on Netflix. Like it was in the top 10 for a while, called I See You.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I saw everyone reviewing it on Letterboxd. I was like, the Helen Hunt one. And it's,
And I was like, what is this? And then we watched it. And like, honestly, I don't want to say anything about it because it's better if you don't know anything and just watch it cold.
I would agree.
But it's quite good. It's like really manipulative. And it goes in some directions you would not expect at all. So it was a pretty fun watch, actually. I thought it was so strange that something that's like already like 4 years old was like really doing super well on Netflix.
This happens a lot on Netflix though, when they like dump the new editions, people find stuff and all of a sudden like a movie from like 10 years ago is new again and everybody gets excited, which I think is really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I Saw You was really funny, or I See You. It's pretty great. And I also watched Missing, thanks to my sneaky hookup. And I watched it on my laptop, which I felt is fitting.
That's very fitting. I want more of these type of movies. I kind of like these interface thrillers, because Searching was such a surprise. And then when Missing came out, it was like, yeah, I'm down to see this. And Searching I watched at home, but Missing I saw on the big screen. And I was like, I love the intrigue of these films and just how they're doing it. And even Missing, I felt like there was at a certain point that I predicted what was going to happen in the ending. Mm-hmm. But still, the ride getting there was fun.
Yeah, the ending kind of dropped the film for me a little bit, because I was enjoying it so much up until the point where I was like, oh, really? This is where they're going? but yeah, it was fantastic. And Storm Reid is incredible. Mm-hmm. She is another person that I will watch pretty much anything she's in, because I think she's great in everything.
And to think she started from a Wrinkle in Time was the debut with Ava DuVernay.
Mm-hmm. My worst film of that year.
It looks beautiful, but wow.
It does look beautiful. It's a bit of a mess.
And then another, and then it's got that weird Chris Pine shot in the red.
It's not good.
Yeah. Poor Ava.
She's done okay.
13th she did okay. And Selma were just such crowning achievements, but she just, nothing else since then has really worked out.
You know, something odd though, like, so her production company picked up the Body Remembers.
I've
forgotten that title.
The Body Remembers Where the World Broke Open. That movie annihilated me.
Which is a brilliant film. But so Array picked it up there's no hard media for it. There's no DVD. There's no nothing. And now it's off the streaming services. So that film has essentially disappeared.
Yeah. It's gone now. So it's so important and it's gone.
Yeah. It's an important film. It's one of the best films made. Definitely one of the best Canadian films made in the last 20 years. A huge local production. Two female co-directors who are brilliant. The discovery of Violet, who is incredible. That movie is amazing. And now it's disappeared off the face of the earth, because it doesn't exist in hard media and it's not on any streaming platforms anymore. Well,
people should tweet the hell at Ava and be like, what the fuck? Because you can't, especially diminishing an indigenous production like that too. Like we need more bolstering of these talents, not silencing of them, because that's been the problem in film for all this time. So yeah. That's super, super disappointing.
Yeah, I was really optimistic too when I heard that it was Array that was picking it up, because yeah. I thought, oh, this is great. You know, mm-hmm. it's a female company, and it's, you know,
it's going to get a wider view, especially yeah. with Ava behind it.
Yeah.
They've just like totally dropped it. It's really disappointing.
I didn't know that. No. I'm more disappointed about that now than I am about the fact that Barbarian doesn't have a Blu-ray. Or physical media. You can only stream it. Is it? Is it confirmed?
Yeah, the director in a Q&A on Reddit said that it's coming.
Come on, Zach, get it going.
Supposedly they underestimated the popularity.
That and movie was the most fun I'd had in the theater last year.
As soon as sure. Justin Long breaks out the tape measure, I was like, this is the greatest movie. He's not scared.
It's all about that square footage, baby.
It's so brilliant. It's such a character. I love how much Justin Long wears his character flaws out on his sleeve in that movie. It's so funny. Yeah. It's so funny. And horrific because that dude is prevalent. Like one, like two out of six dudes is that dude.
Especially in Vancouver.
And I think I'm being lenient there. I'm being lenient just so I don't get hate mail.
All right. Who wants to pick a film for next month?
Hold on, I'm not done. I have something I watched.
Holy.
Guys, I watched an entire season of Beef in one night.
Oh, it's so good, right? It's so good. Ali Wong is getting an Emmy.
She has to. Show is not at all what you expect from the get-go. And then as soon as that car drives off and you're like, it's her, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And it just gets progressively worse. I've never seen a better interpretation of the word beef in my life. It's just so crazy. I love this show. I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
It's on Netflix?
Yeah, it's on Netflix. A24's first series.
A24.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the first episode is, I think, close to an hour. Yeah. And so I thought every episode was going to be that long, but then they even off at around 30 minutes. Yeah. Hence why I managed to watch the entire thing in one sitting.
It's so damn good.
Essentially. We stopped for dinner and that was about it. That's what we did last night. It's amazing. Highly recommend it.
There's so many shots in that show that I was like, because I didn't look up who directed it or anything. So there's some shots in that. I was like, oh my God, did Coconata make this show? And it's not Coconata, but
it's Hikari.
Yes.
Did the first couple of episodes and then a couple of episodes towards the end.
Yeah.
So they have a very specific look for sure.
Oh, it's really good. And Steven Yeun can't do no wrong at this point. He's got the best agent in the world. Is he just being approached by these projects, reading the first lines of the script and being like, okay, let's do this.
I think that that's part of it. I mean, I think that it probably, he's managed to walk his Walking Dead cachet into this like little, this niche market where he is kind of like the go-to guy for like certain types of films. And there's currently like this surge in like Korean media in general, which I think is helping. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, and he's picking really, really great work. He's working on some really fascinating projects. I mean, this could have easily been done with a bunch of white people. Yep. Like, it's not about that at all. But it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
And Maria Bello, I haven't seen her in anything in a while. I'm so happy to see her. Even though she's a bitch. First-rate bitch. That chair.
Okay. I'm going to watch it.
It's really good. Highly, 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 highly recommend it.
Speaking of incredible television, hey, Succession's still the best show on television.
Yeah,
it's pretty damn good, anywhere. I gotta say. Yeah, no.
Nope. they're gonna ride out the storm.
They'll be okay.
This season, every episode has like either made me cry or just put my head into my lap and just like shake my head for like 20 straight minutes. Like last episode, Connor said something that just like completely broke me. And he hasn't spoken anything good in like three seasons.
Well, this is the thing with this show, though. Like, they have these like sequences and these lines that feel like they're just like part of the wallpaper. Mm-hmm. And then you think about it and you're like, holy shit, was that like the most zen thing that anybody has ever said? And yeah. It's like this every single episode.
Yeah, it's so good.
The whole relationship thing is just like so heartbreaking.
Tom and Shiv.
Yeah, and it's so real. And it's...
I love Shiv so much.
Yeah, it's amazing. Snook is
just a gift.
She's great. She's fantastic.
And it's funny to think that the first thing I saw her in was Predestination, the Spierig Brothers movie.
Yeah, that movie is great. So amazing good. Score.
One of the best time travel movies ever made. I will say that.
Well, has she been in the last one?
The Spierigs?
I think they're still around.
Yeah. I think the last thing the Spierigs did was that Netflix Dark Crystal series.
Yeah.
Was the last thing the Spierigs did.
Very, very cool practical effects films.
Yes. Undead is such a cool movie. I love Undead so much. It's one of those fast-paced, frenetic Aussie horror films. And the lead character's name's Mungo. And the actor's name was Mungo. Like, he's just some outback weirdo. But yeah, I love the Spierigs.
Speaking of weirdness, remember last episode when we had to explain to Marina what Florida Man was?
Oh, yes. And now it's out this week.
Netflix has a show called Florida Man coming out.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
I'm sure it will be, but not for me.
How dare you doubt its greatness?
It's got Edgar Ramirez in it.
Oh, damn. That means I might actually have to watch it.
Clark Gregg, Edgar Ramirez. I forget who the female lead is, isn't it?
Oh, great.
The mark against Clark Gregg is he adapted Chuck Palahniuk in a terrible film. Choke.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he went against everything that Chuck Palahniuk asked him not to do in it. And it's funny because there's like a, on the DVD for it, there is a interview with Chuck Palahniuk and Clark Gregg at the same time, and he's just basically
how
like,
awkward is it?
It's really awkward. It's really awkward, and Palahniuk pointing out everything that he, every time that Clark Gregg did something, he told him not to do and stuff, and it's kind of funny.
I have a copy of Fight Club signed by Chuck Palahniuk, and it says, "How you doing, buddy?" Chuck Palahniuk.
That's good. That's so
amazing.
Chuck. That's so Chuck. Yeah. I want him to sign my copy of Survivor. I think it's that or Diary.
Yeah.
Those are the two that mean the most to me. Invisible Monsters is probably actually tied for second on that one.
Guts.
There was a period in my life that everything I was reading was Chuck Palahniuk.
Yeah.
I was so addicted to his stuff. But then I think I got out of the nihilism a little bit, out of the reeds of the nihilism. And
he was always a little too much for me. I never.
He's just, it's just angry and vitriol all over. Yeah.
I don't need words. Any of that in my life. I don't need to dig that deep into that. I mean, especially with a book. I mean, with the movie, it's like 90 minutes or whatever.
It's
a little easier to swallow, but when you're in a book, it's,
you live in
a book. It's a big, it's a big commitment. And yeah, I don't think I can, my psyche can't handle that. Sorry. It never could. So Bill, are you going to guide us through what's coming out so we can pick a movie? Cause I have no idea what's coming.
All right. I wrote them all down on
April. We knew you would.
On April 14th, we have Renfield.
I already got my ticket.
Nick Holt and Nick Cage.
Almost a year, like within a year of when he released Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. So we get to continue another Cage-a-sance year.
I like it.
I'm always game for it. I
think it looks great.
I'm not a Nicolas Cage apologist because I'll never apologize for the man.
I agree.
He doesn't need any apologies.
No apologies did you guys- needed.
Do you guys know that they worked together before? Nick Cage and what's his face?
Nick Holt?
Nicholas Holt. Yeah. The weatherman.
Oh shit! Was he the? He was the kid in
he
that.
He was the kid.
Would have been after about a boy.
Adorable. I saw a very adorable interview where Nicholas Hoult was saying that. Yeah, apparently, like Nick Cage fed him his first ever corn dog.
Yeah, I saw the same thing.
That's so funny.
Sorry.
So also that weekend, the new Makoto Shinkai film, Suzume.
I'm still angry at Crunchyroll, but I'm going to go and see this opening weekend because, yes.
Because Your Love is Amazing and Weathering with You, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Your name is awesome.
They're all good.
You know, I watched the trailer. It looks just like Your Name. I'm like, this sort of seems like it's a bit of a pattern, but he's a really good filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he is.
And this probably should have been at Spark last year.
Yes, I blame Crunchyroll. They weren't fast enough on those subtitles. God damn it.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
April 21st, Bo is Afraid, the new Ari Aster film.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I was in when you said Ari Aster. I have no idea what it's about. Like, I've seen the trailer, still don't know what it's about.
Can we do it?
Do you know the runtime?
I
want to
do that.
I would say that's my vote too, but I don't know if I'm getting it at Penticton though. That's my only thing.
Okay.
So, over 3 hours.
I'm
so excited.
Is my psyche ready for this?
Bring it.
I'm always ready.
Supposedly it's mental.
Of course it is.
And I'm like, you saw Midsummer? Like, come on. Yeah,
exactly. What did you think?
Yeah. Also that weekend, because let's just fuck everything up, Evil Dead Rise. That trailer rules.
The cheese grater.
I don't know, man. Another Evil Dead movie, though? Really?
How have they failed, though?
It's in an apartment.
They have not failed yet. True. They have not failed because the 2013 Evil Dead fucking rocks.
I agree. The movie is way better than it has any right to be.
Oh, my God. Fede nails that movie. I think it's the majority practical effects. Like, oh, and that chainsaw scene at the end and just the geyser of blood. Like, it took that gore to like art house levels. Like, I will give him credit.
And I just don't know. Like,
I think Lee Cronin really created something really cool with this Rise. So I don't know. I'm excited.
We'll see. I mean, I'll see it, but I don't know. I'm on the fence.
Also,
this could be a good discussion then.
Yeah. Also this weekend, The Covenant, the second Guy Ritchie film in like 2 months.
Yeah. But we didn't get Operation though.
Yeah, but this one doesn't look good.
Operation's on Prime.
Yeah, I saw that, but like we didn't get any like theatrical or VOD or anything like that. But yeah, Covenant doesn't look like a Guy Ritchie film. Like even when you look at the trailer, it just does not. What's the guy that did Safe Room and Everest? Balthazar Komentar.
Yeah.
That's kind of that kind of looks like one of his films.
Oh, okay. I had to look it up because I'm like, I don't actually remember this one. It's got
Jakey Gyllenhaal though.
Yeah.
He's still not giving Taylor Swift her scarf back, but he is going to save somebody in the Middle East.
Well, supposedly she's single now, so maybe he can get that with her.
That's all win for us.
She's not going back there. Come on. She's smarter than that. At least
I'm sensing a CD in 2 months.
A record. We're all about the records now, okay?
April 28th. Are You There, God? It's me, Margaret.
I'm so in.
I mean,
Judy Blume book.
About Judy Blume and menstruation and stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I can't wait.
That's going to be my pick.
Then the next week, the big one, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
I think that's just too easy of a pick.
Yeah,
if we're being honest about it, it just.
Also, I just gotta say, I am so I'm just fed up with superhero movies now. At this point, I will wait for them to show up on Disney Plus. I have no desire to see them in the theater. I don't care, so I don't really. My vote is absolutely 100% opposed to that one.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
I would say Bo is Afraid. It's the best choice. Hopefully, that I can get it and see it. The one I'm looking forward to is this week, Kelly Reichardt's new movie comes out, Showing Up.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited.
I'm really excited. It's got John Majerle in it. And I love John Majerle.
It does look really great.
This is the first film. Her last one was First Cow, right?
Yeah.
And which I loved.
I like that movie a lot too.
Loved that movie so deeply. So yeah, I've been excited about this one.
She never misses for me.
No, though, no. And Michelle Williams is in this one too. So
yeah. And Hong Chao.
And Hong Chao. 2022's MVP, Hong Chao.
Yeah.
Yes.
I watched the Night Agent because Hong Chao's in it. So yeah.
It's not bad.
No, it's not bad. It's because it's Sean Ryan who did like The Shield and stuff like that. So that's my conduit into it. And I can get over the fact that Gabriel Basso is in Hillbilly Elegy and glorified J.D. Vance for 2 hours. What a
crap film.
Fucking bullshit. And what was the point of that movie? To show that J.D. Vance is like, I don't really care about my family.
To make me hate Amy Adams.
Yeah, I guess so.
This is it. Yeah. This is it, actually. Because she's so not good there.
No, that movie is fucking shit.
It's so next month, not Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, that's cool. The choice. That's what we came down to. I hope it's Beau Is Afraid. Like, I hope that I can, because I know all you guys will have access to it. I'm not sure about my access to it. So unless the studio, wink, wink, Kate Parks or somebody like that's going to hook me up with it, or the movie gods have been ticked and are smiling on me and I do get to see it. Yeah, we'll have to play that one by ear.
I'm seeing it next week. It opens a week early in IMAX.
IMAX. I don't know if I.
That's a weird IMAX release.
It's playing at Riverport for a week in Vancouver. If you guys are interested,
I hate that theater.
Got it too.
Not a fan. It's not even real IMAX.
Not getting any sponsorship from Riverport Theater.
Oops.
I'm just disappointed I didn't get to see Air in IMAX. It feels like it lent itself to IMAX. Conversational movies.
I was going to say, I'm not sure if you're being sarcastic or not.
I 100% am. I don't understand. Some movies I don't understand why they're... Why are you releasing that in IMAX? There's something recently I was like, why in IMAX? I don't even understand.
Wait, Pi released in IMAX?
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, AK IMAX.
What? Why?
Because I can, apparently.
Yeah,
I guess so.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird power move there, Darren.
All right, so let's try for Beau, but if not, let's do Evil Dead.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, I'm down. Okay. My Twitter namesake says yes.
All right. So, guys, anything else before we start to wrap things up?
No.
No.
That show was way more on the rails. Thank you, Melissa.
Yeah, thanks, Melissa. Exactly. You're our guide.
All you.
I didn't do anything.
30 minutes, you guys. I don't think we were on the rails.
we totally were.
No.
You clearly have not listened to the last episode. It was nuts. edited it. It was nuts.
Tangent City.
Yeah, very much so. So, guys, where can folks find you?
I'm at The Steeble Dead on Twitter and Instagram. You can also find me on Letterboxd, which is the superior social media. My website, stevestebbing.ca, and I'm on The Shift with Shane Hewitt every Thursday at 11 p.m. Pacific time. And that's across Canada. And my horror podcast is Tremble the Horror Podcast. And you can find that on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's one more. I also did an episode of Perfect 10 on the Thunderquack Podcast Network, and the episode we did was on Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which is now back in the news because Edgar Wright is going to be doing a full anime with the original cast. So the hotness that is Scott Pilgrim has now been renewed, so you can check that out. And I think that's it.
Phil?
I am Bill Harris. I am at SoundJam69 on Twitter, SoundJam69 on Letterboxd, and that is about it. I don't do social media, and I barely do Letterboxd. I was going to try to find some weird shit on your guys' letterbox this month, but I just couldn't find anything. other than Melissa just watched Sound of Metal. What the fuck was that?
I know. It's pathetic. It's pathetic. But
it's not. You're allowed to. Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but it's after the credits.
Can I just say we need to stop letting Steve go first on these, like, on the podcast things. I'm like super Mr. Professional who does all of these things professional. I'm on Twitter, Letterboxd.
That's pretty much all I do. And that you're lucky if I update anything at this point.
I know. I looked at Marina's letterbox. She's like, oh, she watched Megan 2 months ago. All right, cool.
I list this on my phone, and eventually I'll do a dump probably tomorrow.
I've been keeping my ratings away so you guys wouldn't know what I thought.
Oh, look at you getting
Yeah.
I love that Bill thinks we all creep his letterbox the way that he creeps our letterbox.
You mean you don't?
You don't? My shit's genius.
I know that yours is the definitive opinion, but, you know.
Pretty much.
And Melissa, where can folks find you?
Oh, I'm on Twitter. And also on Letterboxd. Yeah.
And I have a weekly series about, sorry.
And folks, you can find me on Twitter at The Marina, on Instagram at The Marina 2. Look at that. And on Letterboxd as The Marina, when I eventually update it, which will probably be tomorrow. You will have some fresh ratings there, maybe. I don't know. I may have to watch something that you guys talked about today. So I still haven't seen Missing. So maybe I'll spend my time doing that later.
It's fun. It's a fun watch.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. You can come on by atcpod.ca for links to all of the stuff that we talked about today and links to everybody and where you can find them so you don't have to be madly writing things down as we wrap things up. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with Bo is Not Afraid or Bo is Afraid. What is it called?
Bo is Afraid.
Right?
Bo is Afraid. Or Evil Dead Rise. Or
so probably both.
Yeah.
Or. Until then.
Bye.